attention is going to cover. We agreed with the presenter. They will take time, take us through their presentation. It might seem to be taking a bit of time for the committee, but it would help us quickly wrap up the proceedings, because we want to clarify a number of issues, issues relating to this concept of cost-plus mine versus commercial mines, this notion of prepayment, which the committee is seized with, and of course there are certain transactions or contracts relating to coal, whereby some of the service providers have been chased out of the businesses or contracts they had with Eskom. And the issue of the price and how this whole notion of the price operates. So the presentation is going to deal with these issues in detail, and I don't intend to interrupt the presentation. So we just wanted to warn the committee that we might seem to be taking a bit of time because of these issues are very intricate details, and we need this information. Thanks, Chair. Mr. Mgozo, just for the record, if you can just state your full names, and then you can take the committee through the presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Baran. My name is Mkholisi Donald Mbuyisa Mgojo. I am the CEO of Exxaro Resources. I make this statement on the invitation of the Portfolio Committee and in my capacity as the Chief Executive of Exxaro Resources. Exxaro was invited by this committee and requested to address two issues. The first is the manner in which Eskom has unlawfully pushed Exxaro out of the coal supply space and contracted with a third party parties and a considerably higher price to the fiscus. The second issue is Exxaro's understanding and experience of Eskom's alleged practice and policy regarding prepayments or pre-purchases. Late yesterday, we were also asked to give just a better understanding of who Exxaro is in terms of its BEE structure and clarify as to why, for instance, Exxaro moved from a 50% BEE to a 30% BEE. Because I'm sure that is going to be one of the questions that's going to be asked. So we will clarify that. Exxaro has accepted this invitation and intends sharing information on the above issues in good faith and to the best of our knowledge and recollection. Furthermore, Exxaro has been mentioned several times before this committee and in the media. Accordingly, Exxaro has a responsibility and an obligation to make this statement in order to clarify matters and set the record straight. This statement is supported by agreements, letters, minutes, and other documents, some of which are attached for ease of reference. Should the committee require further documents other than those attached to this statement, Exxaro will be most happy to provide them, subject to appropriate confidentiality undertakings if required. This statement also refers to statements made by other persons before this committee, especially where they diverge with our understanding of certain events, Eskom policies, and historical practices. In addressing the two questions set out above, namely Exxaro being pushed out of coal supply space and Exxaro's experience and understanding of prepayments, we do the following in the statement. One, we differentiate between cost-plus coal supply agreements, referred to as CSAs, and commercial CSAs. We explain the cost-plus mine contracts, namely Arnot and Matla, and certain of the commercial contracts with Eskom. We set out a chronology of some of the key events that led to this inquiry. We explain the modus operandi between Exxaro and Eskom in the execution of the CSAs before Brian Molefe was appointed CEO at Eskom and thereafter. I started working with ASC Zocol, one of Exxaro's predecessors, as its marketing and logistics manager in 2001. From 2006, I held the position of the executive general manager of base metals and industrial minerals in Exxaro. I then became the executive head of coal operations in August 2008. In May 2015, I was appointed chief executive officer designate and became chief executive officer of Exxaro in April 2016. I have therefore worked within Exxaro in various capacities for over a decade. Today, I am accompanied by the following five Exxaro representatives. On my left, Dr. Nombasa Tsengwa. She is Exxaro's executive head, coal operations. Dr. Tsengwa managed Exxaro's Cost Plus mines between 2010 and 2015. She also managed its commercial mines in Mpumalanga from 2014 to 2015. Behind me, I have Mr. Bram van Stalten. He is Exxaro's general manager of Mpumalanga and ferroalloys. He manages the Cost Plus and commercial mines in the Mpumalanga area. He took over that responsibility from Dr. Tsengwa in 2015. Mr. Sakiswanapul, he is Exxaro's group manager of marketing and logistics. His department is responsible for managing and negotiating the coal supply agreements with Exxaro's customers, which include Eskom. Mr. Melis Walker, he is Exxaro's group manager of financial performance coal operations. He has been dealing with the coal business since 2012. He handles all the financial aspects of that business and its CSAs. Ms. Yvette Kluver, she drafts and negotiates Exxaro's contracts with our customers, which include Eskom. Exxaro was formed in 2006 pursuant to a merger between the non-iron ore assets of Kumba Resources and ASCZWE. It is one of the largest black-empowered South African-based diversified resources companies. It has business interests in South Africa, Europe, and the United States of America and Australia. Now, since in its inception, where Exxaro was established in 2006 as a result of a combination of old coal assets from ASCZWE Mining, a company founded by Mr. Sipho Nkosi and other partners in 1999, and the remaining assets of Kumba Resources following its restructuring to form Kumba Iron Ore. Exxaro was listed on the main board of the JSE in November 2006, with mining investments and operations in iron ore, coal, zinc, ferroalloys, titanium, and the largest broad-based black shareholding of 52.16%. Mr. Sipho Nkosi became the CEO of Exxaro in 2007. The broad-based black shareholding, which was brought together by ASCZWE, amongst others, constituted a combination of the National Movement of Rural Women, NEHAWU, youth groups, other women's groups, and financial shareholders. Funding for the participation in the shareholding structure of Exxaro, which at the time was valued at $9 billion, consisted largely of $7 billion of debt funding and $2 billion equity based on the value of ASCZWE's mining assets. Employee share ownership plan, referred to as Empower, was also created in two phases of 5 years. The second phase expired in the first half of 2017. The broad-based black shareholding structure was in place for 10 years until in its expiry in November 2016, at which point, as part of the unwind of Exxaro's first empowerment transaction, the remaining debt of $2.8 billion was repaid and the net value of $7.5 billion was distributed to all the beneficiaries of the shareholding structure, including the IDC. The existing BEE shareholders have been locked in and prevented from selling shares for a period of 10 years. In 2016, the locked-in shareholders were for the first time permitted to exit the structure as a lock-in period for Exxaro's 52% black-owned shareholding had come to the end after the 10-year period. This meant that Exxaro had to form a new BEE structure. Exxaro has recently completed a 30% replacement broad-based black ownership transaction to the value of 12.5 billion rand. A considered decision was taken to structure a meaningful and sustainable transaction. This required as a high level of equity as possible and as a low a level of debt to ensure financial viability. In this regard, the broad-based black shareholders were able to invest about 66% of the net value amounting to 3.5 billion obtained from the previous transaction as equity into the replacement transaction. When combined with other facilitation from Exxaro, IDC and minority shareholders, the resulting debt was 20% of the total value of the transaction. To put the new transaction into perspective, the new 30% transaction has 2.5 billion in debt and 3.5 billion in equity contributed by black shareholders. A replacement transaction at a 50% shareholding level would have resulted in higher levels of debt of 11.5 billion compared to the 2.5 billion of debt. Exxaro supports the imperatives of economic transformation in South Africa. When the second replacement transaction commenced, there was uncertainty around the legislative requirements for empowerment in South African mining sector. Exxaro's shareholders firmly believe that it is critical that Exxaro's business value that it maintains a sustainable empowerment status driven by ownership. Remaining empowered is essential for Exxaro to maintain stability in its operational environment, reinforcing sustainable relationships with critical stakeholders in the industry, and ensure ongoing compliance with customer and under industry requirements. We believe that a 30% broad-based black shareholding, we have concluded a transaction with much less risk and higher likelihood of delivering value to all shareholders. However, this outlook remains subject to market and commodity price performance. The broad-based shareholding will be further enhanced by the inclusion of Exxaro's employees as well as a shareholding of community benefit. The structure of this shareholding is under consideration. The transaction for both employees and communities is expected to be completed by at the end of this calendar year. So since Exxaro was formed in 2006, we have returned 16 billion to shareholders in the form of dividends. Of this, about 8 billion has been paid to BEE shareholders. We have implemented Empower Employee Share Ownership Scheme, which benefits Exxaro's non-management employees, which paid 1.2 billion rand over the past 10 years. We have invested 420 million over 10 years in terms of local economic development. And therefore, Exxaro is a diversified business. Eskom is one of Exxaro's biggest customers. The coal that Exxaro supplies to Eskom generates approximately 35% of all the coal-fired electricity produced by Eskom. Eskom thus remains a very important customer for Exxaro, and Exxaro hopes to build and maintain a solid relationship with Eskom in the future. Cost plus mines versus commercial mines. We deal separately with Exxaro's cost plus and Eskom mines in explaining the prejudice caused by Exxaro to Exxaro by Eskom's conduct over the last few years. In so doing, we hope to remove any confusion around so-called prepayments for coal. Prepayments for coal are not envisaged in the CSAs between Exxaro and Eskom for either cost plus or commercial mines. Before turning to the issue of prepayments and prejudice, we briefly explain the distinction between cost plus and commercial mines. At cost plus mines, the power stations were typically built next to the existing mine reserves. Historically, mining was facilitated by Eskom. Eskom invited industry players to use their skills and resources to establish the cost plus mines, and in so doing, to assist in building South Africa's economy. Eskom is contractually obliged to provide the capital and operating expenditure, referred to as CapEx and OpEx, the coal reserves, mining expertise, and skills, and human resources at the cost plus mines are in turn dedicated exclusively to Eskom for the duration of the CSA. Exxaro thus sacrifices its ability to supply coal to any other party. The mining house receives a management fee for its services, expertise, and the risks it bears. These risks include those associated with being the mineral right owner and in contracting in Exxaro's name with third parties. All surface land rights, equipment, and plant costs are funded and owned by Eskom, whilst the mineral rights are owned by the mining house. Eskom is required by the CSAs to purchase this land to enable Exxaro's mining at the cost plus mines. Eskom is also required to pay for all rehabilitation costs, pollution control measures, and environmental costs at the cost plus mines, and penalties and bonuses on the coal specification are provided for in the CSA. Cost plus mines offer a number of benefits to Eskom. These include the following. 1. The CSAs offered security of supply of coal to Eskom, as coal was guaranteed over a long period of time, that is more than 20 years. They also mitigated the risk of coal being exported from South Africa in the event that the other competitive markets opened abroad. 2. The cost plus mines dedicate their coal reserves and human resources, mining expertise, and skills to Eskom. 3. Cost plus mines reduce logistical costs and minimizing damage to the roads, as coal at these mines is typically delivered to the power station by way of a conveyor belt. 4. Eskom has transparency regarding the price of coal sold from the cost plus mine. 5. The margin charged on the coal at the cost plus mines is usually less than 5% compared to more than 20% at a commercial mine. 6. The price of coal at cost plus mines remains relatively constant, as it is not linked to fluctuations in the coal market. The cost of coal is affected only by normal production cost increases. 7. the price of the coal supplied to Eskom in terms of the cost plus CSAs is the actual cost of production, which is approved by Eskom plus a management fee. This management fee is calculated by way of an agreed formula. The price is escalated annually in accordance with PPI. Commercial mines stand on a different footing. In terms of their CSAs, the commercial mines supply coal to Eskom at a fixed price, which escalates annually at an agreed formula. The term of agreements can be classified as 1. Short term being between 1 to 3 years, 2. Medium term being above 5 years, and 3. Long term being above 10 years. The terms of the CSAs that commercial mines conclude with Eskom are different to those concluded for cost plus mines. The relationship is an arm's length and is based on commercial principles. The mining house provides capital for the mine and is responsible for all capital and operational expenditure, coal reserves, mining expertise, skills, human resources, and rehabilitation costs. The mining house thus has more control over the capital it employs and how it utilizes the available ore body. But it also needs to charge a commercial price to ensure a minimum return on its investment as realized for its shareholders. The land rights, equipment, plant and mineral rights are owned by the mining house. The risk and obligation for all closure obligation is borne by the mining house. Penalties are payable when the volume supplied by Exxaro or taken by Eskom are below the contractual tonnage. Where the delivered coal quality is below the requirements provided in the CSA, penalties are also payable by Exxaro. Bonuses are payable where the coal quality is above the specification provided in the CSA. And now, turning to the so-called prepayment for coal. Mr. Anoj Singh, the former chief financial officer of Eskom, states in justifying Eskom's so-called prepayment for coal to Degeta that, A, I quote, prepayment of this nature is not unique and was done in the past and will continue to be done going forward. Mr. Singh's written statement, page 28, paragraph 107. He further contends that prepayments were made to cost plus mines to the tune of $11.3 billion in terms of a 2008 procurement mandate of the Board Tender Committee. Mr. Singh's statement, page 29, paras 107 to 111, pages 65 to 68, paras 37 to 47. Mr. Singh refers to cost plus mines enjoying a, quote, prepayment of capital into their mining operations, close quote, and cites Eskom's approval of a capital prepayment of $1.8 billion to Exxaro's Matla mine. Mr. Singh's statement, pages 67 to 68, para 46. Mr. Machela Koko, Eskom's group executive for generation, similarly suggests that prepayments to suppliers for coal was commonplace and in line with Eskom policy. Mr. Koko's written statement, pages 33 to 34, para 89, pages 35, paras 96 to 97. The process of funding capital projects at the cost plus mines is clearly defined in the CSAs. This is Eskom's contractual obligation. The funding of such capital projects does not, however, contemplate any prepayment. Should the relevant cost plus mine need capital, it is first discussed and agreed with Eskom that the item should be investigated. After this, it is investigated and found to be necessary, The item goes through a project development and approval system at both Exxaro and Eskom. The project must then be approved by various committees and, if necessary, by the Eskom board. Funding is then released in partial payments for work approved and done. These approved funds are, in other words, not prepaid to Exxaro. They are only paid as and when the work is done and Exxaro incurs the capital costs, and then only against presentation of an invoice. The process often leaves Exxaro out of pocket when contractors demand immediate payment, and Exxaro must wait for Eskom's monthly payment to defray the expense. Therefore, to describe the capital payments in this context as prepayments, as Mr. Singh does, is misleading. In short, these so-called prepayments for capital to which Mr. Singh refers were not prepayments at all. In addition, no prepayments of any sort are made to Exxaro's commercial mines. Furthermore, Exxaro staff have conducted a reasonable, diligent, and thorough check, and as far as Exxaro is aware, Exxaro has not at any point in time received any prepayments or prepurchases of any nature, include in relation to coal or for capital. Exxaro has no knowledge of any Eskom policy dealing with prepayments or prepurchases. As far as Exxaro is aware, Eskom does not make prepayments to any other major miners in the industry. This so-called prepayment to De Geta for coal, of which Exxaro learned through the media, is the only instance to our knowledge where such so-called prepayments was made. Prejudice to Exxaro's Cost Plus Mines and Mafube. Exxaro Coal Mpumalanga is a wholly owned subsidiary of Exxaro. It holds licenses for two coal plus mines, Arnott and Matla. These mines supply Eskom's Arnott and Matla power stations respectively in terms of CFAs. The Arnott mine is no longer in operation for reasons described below. Exxaro is presently litigating against Eskom in relation to both mines at Arnott and Matla, as is referred to below. The Matla and Arnott CSAs were concluded in the 1970s and were later revised. The agreements have also been amended on a number of occasions. The mines are required to meet an agreed annual tonnage. The Arnott mine was required to provide 4.02 million tons per year to the Arnott power station, while the Matla mine is required to provide 10.066 million tons per year to the Matla power station. Penalties are incurred if lower volumes than those agreed are supplied, and premiums are charged for delivery of coal above the agreed amount. Similarly, penalties and premiums are payable for coal below and above an agreed quality specification. The arrangement established by the CSAs require close cooperation between Eskom and Exxaro. This is reflected in the execution and implementation of the CSAs in a number of respects. We cite these. First, Eskom is permitted to inspect and audit the records and books of account at Arnott and Matla mines. Second, there are structures in place from operational level upwards to address any issues and matters that arise from the supply of coal from the mines to the power station. At mine level, Eskom and Exxaro hold one, operational technical meetings to deal with month-to-month planning, two, risk meetings which address any operational risks that could potentially impact coal supply to Eskom, and 3, cost meetings. At a senior executive level, a joint management committee considers material issues, issues that the operational teams cannot resolve, and any issues of a strategic nature. 3, the mines provide weekly reports to the power station and vice versa. Are not mine. A constant refrain before this committee has been the high cost of coal supplied by Exxaro's Are Not Mine. We explain below how Eskom caused this cost escalation and how its conduct led to the termination of the Are Not Mine's CSA. Eskom's failure to fund land acquisition. The Are Not Mine was obliged to provide the Arnold Power Station with 4.02 million tons per annum, mined both from the underground and open cast areas. The life of mine depend on the acquisition by Eskom of the land forming part of Arnold Mine's mining rights. This include Mooifontein portions 1, portions 4, 5, 6, and 7, and the Mooifontein remaining extent, which we collectively refer to as Mooifontein land. The coal to be mined from the Mooifontein land, which was to be mined by the open cast method, was needed to augment the tons of coal coming from underground, especially with the underground areas becoming more difficult and expensive to mine. Exxaro was scheduled to start mining the Mooifontein land in 2005. This was later rescheduled to 2012 after Eskom failed to purchase the land. Had Exxaro been able to mine the land as intended, it would have significantly reduced the cost per ton of coal supplied to Eskom. Eskom was contractually obliged to procure this land. From 2004 onwards, Exxaro persistently and repeatedly pointed out to Eskom the necessity and urgency of doing so. However, apart from procuring portion 5 of the Mooifontein land, Eskom either failed to procure the land timely or at all. The history of Eskom's conduct in this regard is set out in a letter which was sent to Mr. Brian Molefe, the then Group Chief Executive of Eskom, on the 22nd February 2016. A copy of this letter is attached to this statement as Annex A. The letter notes, amongst other things, the following. 1. Eskom failed to reach agreement with the relevant farmers for the acquisition of Mooifontein portions 4 and 6. And 2, Eskom only acquired portions 1, 7 and the Mooifontein remaining extent in 2012 and 2013. The delay in acquiring these surface rights prevented the Are Not Mine from obtaining the requisite environmental approvals to mine. These authorizations can take over 3 years to obtain, and the landowners refused to sign the necessary consent documents before Eskom acquired the land. A copy of selected correspondence between Exxaro and Eskom in relation to the acquisition of the Mooifontein land is attached to this statement as Annex B. Because of Eskom's failure to acquire the Mooifontein land, from 2011, the mine was only able to deliver to Arnold Power Station approximately 1.6 million of the agreed 4.02 million tons of coal per year. The decreased production capacity of the Arnold mine was increased the coal's cost per ton. Please see attached Annex C, the letter to Mr. Molefe dated 4 February 2016, which attached a a graph indicating the volumes produced and the associated unit costs thereof from 2007 until 2015 at the Arnott mine. It shows clearly that the reduction in the volume of coal that the Arnott mine was able to produce caused a significant increase in the cost of coal supplied by the mine. Non-funding of operational capital at Arnott. Eskom further limited Arnott's mine production capability by not providing capital for the replacement of critical equipment in terms of the mine's equipment replacement strategy that was agreed between Exxaro and Eskom. Following numerous requests from Exxaro regarding the non-funding of capital for Arnott, we received a letter from Eskom informing us of a moratorium on capital spend. In some cases, Eskom advised us to spend the capital as operational costs, which further exacerbated the cost of production on a rand per ton basis. We addressed a letter in this regard to Ms. Kiran Maharaj, the then divisional executive of Eskom's primary energy division, on 4 July 2014. A copy of our letter is attached to this statement as Annexure D. The letter describes the consequences of Eskom's failure to approve capital projects for the Arnott mine, including the replacement of shuttle cars and the maintenance of battery haulers. As forewarned in the letter, the effect of Eskom's inaction was to dramatically reduce Arnott's mine ability to perform and meet its obligations in respect of the CSA. In addition to the absence of land, the non-funding of essential equipment, that is low-sim continuous miners, low-sim shuttle cars, etc., resulted in the significant reduction in volumes from 4.02 million tons to below 1.8 million tons. The termination of Arnott's CSA. We request that this section is read with Annexure E. This document is a timeline mapping the history leading up to Eskom's termination of the Arnott Mine CSA in 2015. Exxaro was of the view that the Arnott CSA was to expire by the end of 2015. By contrast, Eskom held the view that the CSA expired in 2023. Given these differing positions, we wrote a letter to Eskom on 3rd May 2013, reminding Eskom of the end of the contract. A copy of this letter is attached as Annexure F. On 13 August 2013, Exxaro and Eskom held a meeting. The disagreement on the end date of the CSA was set aside as Exxaro and Eskom decided to open negotiations to find a win-win solution. The intention was to agree on an outcome that would benefit both parties and optimize the unit cost of production at Arnott. Arnott mine was uniquely placed to do so as it was located adjacent to the power station and could deliver coal by conveyor belt. Eskom and Exxaro thus signed a memorandum of understanding to set out the parameters for the negotiation. In furtherance of its discussion with Eskom relating to the future of Arnott, Exxaro finalized a new life of mine plan for the Arnott mine in 2014. It also mapped various scenarios to optimize the cost of production and the supply from Arnott up until the end of life of Arnott Power Station. Eskom stated that it supported these plans in principle, but it would need to engage an independent party to test the scenarios and assumptions Exxaro made to motivate for the approval of Exxaro's plan. Eskom's support was garnered as Eskom knew that Exxaro had prior experience in mining the open-cast Mooifontein reserves. Thus, Eskom requested Exxaro to provide it with three independent contractors that could assist in this regard. Exxaro did so, but never received any response from Eskom on its plans. Up until end of March 2015, Exxaro was still engaging in good faith with Eskom. After April 2015, we continued to urge Eskom to provide us with the scope of work for the vetting required by Eskom on Exxaro's scenarios, as promised by Eskom. Then on 8 September 2015, whilst the parties were still engaging on a win-win solution, Eskom suddenly announced its decision to terminate the CSA at the end of the year. This stance was surprising given Eskom's previous stance that the CSA expired in 2023 and that Eskom was engaging with Exxaro in terms of a memorandum of understanding. A copy of Eskom's letter to this effect and Exxaro's response on 18 September 2015 are attached as annexures G and H respectively. Exxaro then attempted to engage Eskom on whether it was serious about ending the ANOH CSA. A copy of one such piece of correspondence that was sent to Mr. Brian Molefe on the 2nd of March 2016 is attached as annexure I. Exxaro constantly requested to meet with Brian Molefe, a request to which the then chief executive officer never acceded. The National Union of Mine Workers then approached the Department of Mineral Resources and advised that ANOH mine was going to be closed. The NUM threatened to block trucks from bringing in coal to the ANOH power station. On the back of this, the DMR advised that it would facilitate an interaction between Eskom, Exxaro and its employees in December 2015. Mr. Edwin Mabalane led the Eskom group at this meeting on the 22nd December 2015. Then in February 2016, we wrote to Mosebenzi Zwane, the Minister of Mineral Resources, and asked for his intervention. We note that we had already written to him on the 2nd December 2015 and did not receive a response. Copies of both letters are attached as Annexure J to this statement. The Minister did not respond to our second letter either. Eskom's dramatic turnaround with respect to the termination date of the CSA occurred despite the fact that there are coal reserves of approximately 70 million tons that could still be economically mined as per the original plan. The termination of the CSA also led to the closure of the ANOH mine and the loss of around 1,500 jobs. Eskom did not provide any notice of its intention to end the CSA. It did not, as it was obliged by the CSA, make financial provision for the closure of the mine. It furthermore failed to hold discussions with Exxaro as it was required to have done over the 24-month period preceding closure. On the contrary, it gave Exxaro every impression that the contract would continue post-2015, including by approving a budget for ANOH that ran into March 2016 and expressingly authorizing the construction of a change house which had already progressed to an advanced stage. Exxaro seeks to hold Eskom for providing the financial provision obligations in the current arbitration proceedings. The ANOH mine is still capable of being reopened within a certain period and could supply the ANOH power station with at least 4 million tons of coal per annum for at least an 8-year period. This would also defer the mine closure costs. However, reopening the mine will become more difficult and costly as time progresses due to the cost of reestablishment. Steps are being taken to close the mine, with the effect that certain underground areas will be irreversibly lost and will not be able to be reopened, thereby sterilizing coal resources. Exxaro has taken all necessary steps to minimize sterilization in the event that the mine could be reopened. But this would have to take place within a certain time frame, otherwise it would become economically unviable to mine the coal resources. Concluding the Arnold matters, Eskom's non-performance of its contractual obligation has thus prevented Exxaro from delivering the quantity of coal required by the Arnold CSA and increased the cost of coal. Its termination of the CSA then ended the supply of coal provided by Exxaro. This reduction in supply provided the rationale for Eskom to supplement its reserves with coal provided by third-party commercial mines. Just 1 second. I now just turn over to Mafube mine, although it is not a cost-plus mine, but it also supplies the Arnold Power Station. We now turn to explain what happened at Exxaro's Mafube mine, which is a commercial mine. It demonstrates that Eskom adopted a similar modus operandi at many of Exxaro's mines, and in particular at Arnold and Mafube. Arnold Mine, Mafube Mine, and Optimum Mine are situated in close proximity within an approximately 25-kilometer radius of each other. The Mafube Mine is a 50-50 joint venture between Anglo Operations and Exxaro Coal Mpumalanga. The joint venture mines coal from the Springbok-Lachter reserves, which are situated between Middelburg and Belfast near Eskom's Arnold Power Station. Coal is delivered to the power station by conveyor belt. The Mafube mine charged the lowest price for coal delivered to Eskom in the country and could critically provide the power station with security of coal supply until the mine's reserves are exhausted. Mafube was supplying coal to Eskom in terms of a CSA, which was evidenced by correspondence between the parties. Eskom and the mine disagreed on the end date of the agreement. Eskom contended that the agreement terminated after 2023. However, the mine stated that the agreement terminated in December 2015. On the back of this agreement, however, Exxaro and Anglo Operations, as shareholders, agreed to supply coal to Mafube Power Station into 2018. To Arnold Power Station, my apologies. When the coal reserves at Springbok-Lachter will be depleted. So I repeat, on the back of this agreement, Exxaro and Anglo Operations as shareholders agreed to supply coal to Arnold Power Station into 2018 when the coal reserves at Springbok-Lachter would be depleted. This is proposed in a letter from Anglo Coal Operations to Mr. Vusi Mboweni, the then acting divisional executive of Eskom's primary energy division, dated 21 July 2015. A copy of this letter is attached as Annex K. Despite this, and the fact that the Mafube mine delivered the cheapest coal in the country, Eskom terminated the CSA in December 2015. A copy of the letter that Mafube received from Eskom on 3rd November 2015 regarding the termination of the CSA is attached as Annexure L. The termination of the CSA created a need for coal at the Arnold Power Station. This need for coal was fulfilled by third parties who continued to truck coal into Arnold Power Station. Matla Mine. Non-funding of capital of 1.8 billion for Mine 1. Matla Power Station is a baseload power station. It contributes significantly to the grid. Exxaro's Matla Mine has 1 billion tons of coal resources and 250 million tons of coal reserves. This is one of the largest coal resources left in Mpumalanga under one mining right. If it is managed properly and funded optimally, it could, to the benefit of South Africa, provide Eskom with security of coal supply for many years to come. Matla Mine consists of three mines, Mines 1, 2, and 3. All three mines need to operate optimally and must be mined in a synchronized manner for Exxaro to meet the contracted specifications in terms of volume of coal and qualities to Eskom. The qualities of the coal produced by the three mines are very different. The coal from all three mines needs to be mixed together so that the contractually required volumes and qualities are able to be supplied to the Matla Power Station. The contractual volumes are 10.06 million tons per annum, and the calorific value is 19.5 megajoules per kilogram. Exxaro informed Eskom as early as 2004 and persistently thereafter that capital was needed to sink a new shaft for Mine 1 as it was becoming unsafe to mine at the existing shaft. The capital required for this project was 1.8 billion in 2016. Eskom delayed and has to date not provided Eskom with the capital. It has not provided Exxaro with the capital. We explain the adverse impact of the failure to fund the sinking of a new shaft for Mine 1 to Eskom on a number of occasions. One such example is a letter that we sent to Mr. Molefe dated 15 September 2016. A copy of our letter is attached as Annexure M. In October 2016, the Eskom board approved Exxaro's request for funding. However, the request was made subject to the approval of the Minister of Public Enterprise, Ms. Lynn Brown, who then declined the request in a letter to Mr. Ben Ngubane, the then chairperson of Eskom, in April 2017. A copy of the minister's letter is attached in Annexure N. Exxaro is only privy to the letter because Eskom was ordered to disclose the letter in an arbitration proceedings. Minister Brown required Eskom, before she would grant approval, to, I quote, demonstrate how Eskom would use this opportunity to give SIC socio-economic transformation imperatives of the government, as the CSA was signed pre-1994. The minister's stance is most surprising in circumstances where the CSA has been amended and affirmed on numerous occasions after 1994, and where Exxaro is one of the largest and foremost black-empowered mining companies in South Africa. In any event, there are no such conditions provided for in our CSA with Eskom. In October 2016, Eskom did not formally advise Exxaro that the capital had been approved. Nor was Exxaro informed in April 2017 that the minister had declined to approve the funding. We are to date still awaiting a written response from Eskom on these issues. Exxaro, in subsequent letters to Eskom, repeatedly indicated the impact of non-approval of major capital projects at Matla and the detrimental effect this had on qualities, production, and cost of coal at Matla mine over time. An extent of the relevant correspondence, an extract of the relevant correspondence is attached as Annexure O. As 1.8 billion has still not been approved, Exxaro has thus, after unsuccessful mediation proceedings, been forced to seek to compel Eskom to provide the funding as per their CSA obligations through arbitration proceedings. The failure of Eskom to provide funding resulted in the stoppage of Mine 1 in February 2015 because of irredeemable underground deterioration and serious safety concerns for the miners. A letter that was addressed to Eskom notifying it of the closure and its consequences on 5 May 2015 is attached as Annexure P. The stoppage of Mine 1 and the lack of capital approval has increased the cost per ton of coal supplied to the Matla Power Station because of, among other things, the loss of economies of scale at Matla Mine. Furthermore, with non-funding of capital in general, as was the case at the Arnott Mine, Eskom has not provided sufficient capital for the replacement of mine equipment. This has led to the failure of equipment and the aging equipment needing repair more frequently, causing a decrease in mine production capability of the mine. Conclusion on the Matla issues. With the loss of Mine 1, Matla Mine has mined out of sync. This has resulted in a sub-optimized extraction, a sub-optimum quality mix of coal, and less volumes produced. With the loss of Mine 1, 40% of the volume of the coal that was supplied to Matla Power Station has been lost until capital is provided to allow the mine to continue. This means that Matla Mine, without Mine 1, will never be able to deliver more than approximately 7 million tons of coal and will never again meet the contractual agreed 10.06 million tons per annum, nor will it be able to meet the contractually required quality specification. This also has a negative impact on the rand per ton cost as a result of lower production supplied. If the status quo continues, Matla will have to permanently close Mine 1. If the mine needs to be reopened again, the cost of reestablishment will be exorbitant. The Matla mine is, as a result of Eskom's conduct described above, able to supply Matla Power Station with only 7.5 million tons of the 10.06 million tons per year it is contractually obliged to supply. The decrease in the volume of coal available from the Matla mine has provided the rationale for Eskom to purchase imported coal from third parties as a substitute. Since 2015, Eskom imports around 3.6 million tons of coal per year, which is delivered to the mine in approximately 120,000 truckloads per annum. This translates to an average of over 400 truckloads per day, with the concomitant traffic congestion, damage to the road, and risk to other road users, when this coal could otherwise be delivered by conveyor belt directly from the Matla mine. It obviously also increases the delivered rand per ton cost of coal. This means that assuming a price of 500 rand per ton, Eskom has paid more than an estimated 5 billion rand for imported coal from third parties from 2015 to 2017. This inflated cost is impossible to justify when, if the necessary capital were supplied to Mine 1, Matla Mine would be able to supply coal at competitive rates for at least the next 20 years. Matla's remaining coal reserves are in excess of 250 million tons. While the relocation of Mine 1 remains unfunded, one must assume that Eskom will continue to purchase coal from third parties at exorbitant prices. Even if Eskom were to approve the funding at this stage, due to the construction time, it will still take 2 years before the first coal could be produced. The additional expenditure Eskom has incurred in procuring expensive coal acquired from third parties, which is not comparable to coal supplied from Matla by conveyor belt, would have paid for the capital expenditure required at Mine 1 many times over. A graph indicating the significant expense of the acquisition of this coal compared to the cost of coal from Matla mine is attached as annexure Q to this statement. Exxaro is very concerned that this situation is unsustainable. We are also concerned that this situation at Matla, where Eskom has increased the cost of coal ton by starving the mine of capital, may encourage Eskom to allege, as it did at Arnott, that the mine's coal is too expensive. This could provide ostensibly justification, as it did at Arnott, for Eskom to terminate its CSA with Exxaro's mine. It is thus difficult for Exxaro, with our experience at Arnott and Eskom's recent conduct at Matla, not to draw parallels between what happened at Arnott mine and what is happening at the Matla mine. May I, Chair, just take a 1 minute break?
Thank you. You can do that. We are patiently waiting for other news.
Thank you. time.
5 minutes is over. There are members who are asking for 2 seconds. Can we get separate members so that we carry on? Mr. Mgocho, are you ready?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Sure, thanks.
And now, turning just to page 26. Prejudice to Exxaro's commercial mines. In addition to the Coast Bluff mines and the Mafube mine, within the Mpumalanga area, there are 2 other commercial mines that either supply or supplied coal to Eskom, namely NBC and UPAN. In addition to these, we have another mine in Lephalale called Goedgevlei mine, which supplies coal to the Medupi and Matimba power stations. I consider below the situation at UPAN and Goedgevlei. UPAN is relevant to issues raised in the committee's letter of invitation. It is necessary for us to touch on the situation at Goedgevlei in light of unjustified statements made by other members who have appeared before this committee. UPAN mine. UPAN mine was connected to the Majuba power station by a very effective rail system. The system obviated the need to transport coal to the power station by road, which was more expensive. Exxaro and Eskom concluded a CSA commencing on 1 January 2010, which ended in March 2015. In terms of the CSA, the UPAN mine supplied Majuba power station with approximately 170,000 tons of coal per month. In September 2014, 6 months prior to the expiry of the existing CSA, the parties entered into negotiations for the continued supply of coal beyond March 2015. Reached agreement on the price for the new agreement by February 2015. However, after reaching this agreement, Eskom continued to shift the goalposts by persistently raising new requirements which Exxaro was required to meet. As soon as Exxaro complied with a certain set of requirements, Eskom imposed further requirements. The existing contract had expired in March 2015, but was extended on a month-to-month basis to allow the parties to conclude the new agreement. The final agreement was agreed to and ready for signature by September 2015. Despite various requests from Exxaro that Eskom sign the new agreement, Eskom did not do so. It preferred instead to extend the existing agreement on a month-to-month basis. Eskom ultimately did not sign the new CSA, which would have extended Lupin's mine supply to Eskom for a further 3 years. The volumes supplied to Eskom were a substantial part of the Lupin production. A month-to-month CSA was not sufficient for a coal mine to make investment decisions on, and Exxaro was therefore forced to secure a longer-term CSA to support the mine's investment decisions for its extension plans. Therefore, on 29 February 2016, Exxaro wrote to Eskom to say that we could not run the mine on a month-to-month basis, given Eskom's refusal to sign the agreement, we could not continue supplying it with coal. Lupine's mine supply of coal to Eskom thus ended March 2016. A copy of the letter that Exxaro sent to Eskom is attached as Annexure R. Having had such an effective supply route to the power station, it is hard to understand why it took so long for Eskom to complete the contract. Eskom's failure to timeously conclude a contract diverged from its historical practices. Eskom's conduct was even more unusual considering that during this period, other CSAs were concluded by Eskom with third parties for supply to the Majuba power station. Given the efficiency of the coal contract in terms of the logistics channel, price, volume, and the relationship that was built up over the years, we question the reasons why our CSA was delayed for almost a year after having agreed on a price almost already in February 2015. In contrast, it appears from the evidence given before this committee during the testimony of former Eskom CEO, Mr. Tsediso Matona, and some of the questions that were put to him that, one, the Brakfontein CSA between Eskom and Tegeta was concluded in March 2015. This was seemingly at a higher price than what Exxaro had agreed with Eskom. Two, the contract was allegedly concluded soon after Mr. Madonna left Eskom, having refused to sign the Brakfontein agreement due to issues with price qualities and compliance. And three, furthermore, it appears that the Brakfontein tons were ramped up over the same year that Exxaro was painstakingly trying to resolve the additional requirements from Eskom, which is the same period that Eskom took coal from us on a month-on-month basis. Exxaro is still willing and able to supply coal to Eskom from its Lupan mine. The fruitless and wasteful expenditure incurred by Eskom under the Medupi CSA. This section does not address either of the two questions posed to Exxaro by the Portfolio Committee. However, we deem it necessary to address the issues considered below in light of a number of misleading statements that have been made before this committee. Exxaro's Goedegeluk mine supplies coal to Eskom's Medupi and Matimba power station in terms of a long-term commercial CSAs which extend for over 30 years. Goedegeluk has been supplying the full burn demand of the Matimba power station since the early 1980s at an average rate of 14.6 million tons, equivalent to 300 megajoules per gigajoule per annum. On 19 September 2008, Eskom and Exxaro entered in a commercial CSA, which would, amongst other things, regulate the coal supply to the new Eskom Medupi power station. Pursuant to the Medupi CSA, the initial ramp-up, that is, the period during which the power station will be brought online and incrementally beginning to take off coal until the full offtake is reached, was agreed to commence on 1 October 2011 and would end on 31 December 2013. The ramp-up period was designed to coincide with the completion of the Medupi Power Station Units 1 to 6. Upon the completion of these units, Eskom's offtake would be at full volume. To supply the required quality and volume of coal to the Medupi Power Station, Exxaro had to expand its own operations. In doing so, it established the Goedegeluk Medupi Expansion Project, referred to as GMEP. GMAP included, amongst other things, the establishment of a new coal beneficiation complex referred to as GG7 and GG8 plants, landing beds and reclamation facilities. This entailed associated in-pit expansion, including the purchase of trucks, shovels, crushers, discard facilities at an estimated cost of $10.25 billion. The Medupi CSA was concluded on an arm's-length commercial basis as Goedegeluk is not a cost-plus mine and does not operate on a cost-plus principle. GMAP was funded on Exxaro's balance sheet. The Medupi CSA is accordingly based on accepted commercial principles including the following. 1. The CSA includes take-or-pay provisions in favor of both Eskom and Exxaro. These provisions protect both parties from losses caused by the non-performance by the other party of its obligations in terms of the CSA. For example, take-or-pay provisions are included in the CSA in favor of Eskom in the event that Goedegeluk does not supply the required volumes of coal to Medupi. They are also included in favor of Exxaro where Eskom does not offtake the required volumes. The intent of the latter penalty was to recover Exxaro's cost relating to servicing the debt, the cost of capital, and the return on capital, that is, fixed costs, actually incurred in the event that Eskom could not take or pay for Exxaro's coal. This provision is commonplace in supply contracts and is not unique to Exxaro. And the CSA was also included bonuses and penalties based on the consistency of the coal quality supplied by the mine. Mr. Singh states that the penalties Eskom paid to Exxaro in terms of the Medupi CSA, I quote, should be fruitless and wasteful expenditure in terms of the PSMA. He implicitly criticizes Exxaro for the consequent high cost per ton of coal supplied by Goedegeluk. We agree that the penalties for which Eskom is liable under the Medupi CSA and which were caused by Eskom's non-performance constitute fruitless and wasteful expenditure. In any event, Exxaro accommodated Eskom on multiple occasions in order to minimize the financial impact of Eskom's non-performance. This is described in further detail below. We note Mr. Singh failed to mention the cause of Eskom's non-performance to Goedegeluk and the numerous measures Exxaro took in good faith to limit the penalties Eskom paid to it. In this regard, Exxaro concluded several addendas to the Medupi CSA with Eskom. It did so in light of the delays experienced in the construction of the Medupi power station. In terms of addenda 1 to 6 of the CSA, the ramp-up period was amended to commence on 1 May 2012 and to end at 31 December 2014. To accommodate the delays at Medupi, further addendas 7 to 9 were concluded to change the ramp-up period and expected offtake schedules of coal. The mandate from the Exxaro board to its Eskom negotiation team was that Exxaro should accommodate Eskom as far as possible. However, it remained important that Exxaro protected its shareholders' return on capital. We itemize below Exxaro's endeavors to accommodate Eskom. First, due to Eskom's inability to take off the coal volumes agreed to in terms of the Addendum 6 ramp-up schedule, Eskom requested Exxaro to explore the stoppage or slowdown of construction at Goedegeluk to allow Eskom to catch up with the agreed schedule. Exxaro explored this possibility, but our GMAP construction was too far advanced. The stoppage or slowdown of our GMAP could not be accommodated without Exxaro incurring significant contractual liabilities and forfeiting process guarantees due to ramp-up delays. At this stage, Exxaro had already stopped the expansion project and more than 60% of the fulfillment requirement, of the full requirement. Eskom and Exxaro thus agreed that stoppage or slowdown of construction was not a viable option. Exxaro was thus told to continue with its construction program. Eskom agreed that it would build a strategic stockpile with a maximum of 30 million ton capacity to store additional coal not burnt at Medupi. This measure was taken so that Eskom could offtake coal as agreed and to minimize the penalties it incurred. To further assist Eskom, Exxaro delayed some capital expenditure and implemented various cost-reducing measures. These measures enabled Exxaro to afford Eskom a 25% discount on its contractual penalties. The fully ramped-up date was also extended from 31 December 2014 to 31 December 2016 in terms of Addendum 7. Second, barely 6 months later, on 28 February 2013, Eskom notified Exxaro that it was experiencing labor unrest and could not comply with the required coal offtake agreed to under Addendum 7. To accommodate Eskom, Exxaro agreed in Addendum 8 to Eskom reducing its offtake in terms of the Matimba CSA to the contractual minimum and to Eskom nominating Matimba as an alternative point of supply under the Medupi CSA from 2014 to 2016. This led to the Addendum 1 of the consolidated Matimba CSA. In permitting this transfer, Exxaro enabled Medupi Power Station to reduce its 30 million ton strategic stockpile to 10 million tons. Once again, afforded Eskom a 25% discount on the resulting contractual penalties. Third, Eskom once again approached Exxaro stating that it was not able to take coal according to the offtake schedules agreed to in Addendum 8. Exxaro again agreed to accommodate Eskom. Exxaro agreed to extend the full ramp-up date from 31 December 2016 to 31 December 2017. This agreement is reflected as Addendum 9. Fourth, after the conclusion of Addendum 9, Eskom approached Exxaro to pursue initiatives to move Medupi coal from Lephalale to Mpumalanga or to Richards Bay Coal Terminal. Exxaro investigated numerous stockpiling options for the coal as well as possibly of evacuating coal from the Waterberg. Exxaro incurred costs for consulting and designing work associated with considering these options. Exxaro did not pass on this cost to Eskom. To date, Eskom has not responded to Exxaro's input on their mooted options or on a mandate to proceed with either option, despite Exxaro following up with Eskom on a number of occasions. Fifth, Exxaro has moreover and at a significant reduction Eskom's offtake agreed to extend the transfer of coal from Medupi to Matimba until 2018. This results in a loss of about 2 million tons per annum of the contractually agreed offtake under the Matimba CSA. This causes a revenue loss that Exxaro incurs which is not passed on to Eskom. Exxaro accordingly acted in good faith and accommodated Eskom as far as was possible during the difficult construction and ramp-up phases at the Medupi Power Station. Exxaro's accommodation of Eskom has gone beyond that which is contractually required of Exxaro. Exxaro has investigated alternative plans, changed agreed plans, afforded Eskom's material discounts on contractual penalties Eskom owed to Exxaro, and allowed Eskom to transfer tonnage that they could not take to the Medupi at the Medupi Power Station to Matimba Power Station. Mr. Singh's implied criticism of Exxaro in relation to the contractual penalties incurred by Eskom under the Medupi CSA is incorrect and without any foundation. And therefore, in conclusion, looking back on the history set out above,
Exxaro is concerned by at least the following questions. Why, when Mr. Brian Molefe assumed the position of chief executive officer, did Exxaro's relationship with Eskom deteriorate so markedly? Eskom's agreements with Exxaro were in certain instances not adhered to, or where they were being finalized were frustrated. Despite this, and the fact that Exxaro is the biggest supplier of coal to Eskom, Mr. Molefe refused to meet with Exxaro throughout his tenure at Eskom. Why were Exxaro's efforts to optimize Arnold Mine and its escalating costs due to the non-purchase of land ignored when a CSA with Tegeta was concluded with such haste? Why did Eskom summarily terminate negotiations on the extension of Arnold's CSA? Why was the Mafube CSA terminated despite the mine delivering the cheapest supply of coal in Mpumalanga to Eskom? Why was Eskom unconcerned about the premature termination of the Arnold CSA despite the fact that Eskom was aware that it would lead to, one, the loss of 1,500 jobs, and two, an emergency with respect to the coal supply for Arnold Power Station? We note that we have learned from testimony before this committee that this emergency, as well as the termination of supply from Mafube, was used as a basis for procuring coal from another supplier with a concomitant prepayment in April 2016. Why did the Minister of Mineral Resources remain silent when Exxaro requested him to intervene, despite the fact that 1,500 jobs were at stake? Why did Eskom avoid paying $1.8 billion for the Mine 1 shaft at Matla for so long, opting instead to procure coal for over $5 billion and thereby posing safety risks, traffic congestion, and damage to the roads in respect of a mine that was not designed for stockpiling? Why does Mr. Singh use the high cost of diesel to run the open cycle gas turbines to justify the purchase of expensive coal from Tegeta when Eskom could simply have continued to procure coal under its CSA from Arnold Mine and Mafube Mines at a lower cost? Why did Eskom suddenly adopt the practice of making prepayments for coal to a certain miner? And therefore, ladies and gentlemen, let me take this opportunity just to thank you all for allowing us this opportunity to present this statement. And we pledge our continued assistance to this committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mgojo. I don't think there is anyone who would wish to add on what Mr. Mgojo has said. I take it it's a collective decision, and it's a collective statement. Thank you very much. I will now give over to Advocate Vanar if there is anything that he wishes to take or to ask before I open for members to ask.
Thanks, Chair. Just a few questions, Mr. Mgojo. They're not questions more than just confirmations. I just need to make sure that I understand and follow your presentation. In your presentation, you refer to the prejudice that your company suffered at the expense of other third parties or party benefiting. Who are you referring to? Who are these third party or third parties that have benefited at the expense of your company?
Thank you, Honorable Member. From the deliberations that have taken place during this investigation by the Portfolio Committee, it has become clearer in terms of the presentations that have been presented here
that in this particular instance, that it is seemingly Tegeta that has benefited, given the fact that both the Mafube mine and the Arnot mine, which both supplied Arnot Power Station, suddenly lost their contracts to the benefit of Optimum. And therefore, on that basis, I can only conclude that Tegeta was a net benefiter. And that also talked to Lupan, because Lupan in itself was supplying Majuba Power Station, and Braagfontein subsequently, if you look at the timelines that have been presented here, the timing with which Braagfontein was awarded that contract was precisely at the same time where we had already entered into a negotiation, and we were awaiting the signing of our contract, and we were running a month on month, that it was at that time that they were busy ramping up.
Tegeta owned a mine that was supplying coal to Braagfontein at 150 Hendrina. Is that Optimum?
That was the case, but it appears that that coal that was going to Hendrina was subsequently diverted to go to Arnot Power Station at a much more favorable price than what was the contract to Hendrina.
Matla 1. I just need to get clarity around that. Is this the same mine that Mr. Singh, in his submission, says received a $1.8 billion prepayment in capital payment?
Honorable Member, it is exactly the same mine that Mr. Singh was talking about. In actual fact, in our submission, we have gone to show how, in terms of the CSA agreements, how capital is procured and the processes that one goes through during that process through various governance structures until such time that capital is finally released. But it is a CSA contractual obligation for that capital to be made available in order for the miner to meet its own contractual obligation in terms of the volumes of coal that need to be supplied.
And you dispute that there was ever a capital prepayment of $1.8 billion to Matla.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Member, it is actually the first time I've heard of the term prepayment was during these hearings. We have never known of a prepayment for either capital or for coal. We certainly have never experienced that in our contract for any of our requests. And in actual fact, I'm not even sure that such exists with regard to cost plus mines.
So you say there was a contractual obligation on Eskom on a capital investment But eventually, the minister did not give her final approval. Did I understand it correctly? In respect of Matla, which is why you eventually didn't receive this 1.8 billion.
In our submission, we indicated that ESCOM informed us that they had approved the capital for 1.8 billion. And that they then had to submit that approval to Minister Lynn Brown to approve the capital. We were never informed formally by ESCOM of the refusal of Minister Brown to that request. That was never communicated to us. The only time we came to know about it was only at the time when we took ESCOM on an arbitration process where they were forced, because of the request that was made then, for them to make that available to us. Otherwise, we were not aware of that refusal.
But this matter was a cost plus CSA, is that correct?
Yes, it was a cost plus CSA.
You earlier on talked to the benefits for ESCOM in terms of cost plus CSAs. That was that is on page 7. From page 7 of your submission, yes, it's actually page 7. And it would appear that there was more benefits to be acquired by ESCOM if it had complied with its contractual obligations at Matla. Do I get you correctly?
Yes, you are right. What one needs to understand and really appreciate, that at the end of the day, these assets are actually owned by ESCOM. It's their assets. They procure the capital, they spend the money on operational expenses, they make all the necessary provisions for rehabilitation and costs, and therefore you would want to believe that it is to their benefit that these mines are run very efficiently, given the fact that they are spending the capital. And to the extent that by running these operations efficiently, not only do you get the volumes, not only would you get the qualities that would be required, you would also minimize the cost of mining and the cost that ESCOM would have to pay for every ton. So it would be to their interest to ensure that these are being well managed and being run and the costs are being contained very effectively.
But you would then agree with me that, and this is borne out of your concerns that you've raised with Arnott and Matla in particular, where there were certain contractual obligations that ESCOM had to meet, and those contractual obligations were not met.
That is also very true, Honorable Member. For us, it was most indeed surprising and actually very sad that an operation that had the capacity and the capability and the resources on the ground with people capable of extracting those based on historical performance, where they have managed those assets in the most effective manner, ensuring that the volumes were there, ensuring that the qualities were there, ensuring that they were being run in a cost-effective manner, that in spite and despite all of that, certain decisions that were taken that were almost, as if you can say, designed
not to make that operation, a very successful operation, actually materialized. So it is very sad that the end result of that whole exercise was one whereby people had to lose their jobs. To me, more than anything else, that is the biggest pain that one is actually having to deal with. The fact that as the CEO, I would have to stand before 1,500 people, explain to them exactly the fact that there is coal on the ground and we are capable of doing it. We have come up with plans on how we can rescue the mine. And yet, despite and in spite of that, the mine in itself is put into a situation whereby it is to close. It is painful when the miners themselves start approaching DMR and asking for DMR to intervene in a manner that could save jobs, with the other stakeholder being Eskom, and that in itself is not considered as an option. And so to me, that has become the most painful aspect in this whole journey.
I'm in possession here of a letter that Mr. Koko wrote to the Director General of DMR. Now, you would not have known about the letter. I want to hand it over to you. But I want you to focus on the second last paragraph, where we're going to focus. Can I just hand it over to you? I think members do have a copy of the letter. It is also a document that is already part and parcel of the proceedings.
Which one?
It's a letter dated the 6th of December 2015 that Mr. Koko addressed to Dr. Tibedi Ramoncha, the DG of the Department of Mineral Resources.
Honourable members, do you have that letter? Because I've got it. It's part of the package that you were given. It's not in the annexure. It's a loose letter that is. Yes.
Can you just read that? Maybe from the third last paragraph, if you can just read that.
Is that starting whilst Eskom fully? While Eskom fully appreciates the turnaround of the business, it remains concerned that such erratic display of business stability may compromise the security of supply to Hendrina Power Station in the short to medium term. Therefore, Eskom would require a firm resolution on optimum by mid-December 2015. The risk of security of supply for Hendrina Power Station, Komati Power Station, and Arnold Power Station is of such key national interest that we thought it appropriate to bring it to your attention. This upcoming adversity facing Eskom will require some form of intervention on the part of the Department of Mineral Resources to assist Eskom in leveraging the necessary key authorities to assist in assuring resolution of the coal supply situation and certainty going forward.
Now, to that letter, Dr. Ramoncha responds. It is an undated letter. I would like you to read the response to this letter.
Dear Mr. Koko, referencing Optimum Coal Mine Power Supply to Hendrina Power Station. Receipt of your letter addressed to the department pertaining to the intervention required from the department refers. Having regard to the above, we would like to advise as follows. In respect of Hendrina Power Station, the department will prioritize and fast-track approvals for transfer of the mining right on an urgent basis should this be lodged. We have already requested an urgent meeting with Competition Commission to go and plead the case and explain the urgency with which it must be treated. It is indeed a special case given the consequences for our country. Financial provision due to historical liabilities at OCH level is estimated at 1.7 billion. The amount still has to be confirmed through a process which will involve the parties concerned. We would also request for Eskom to play an active role in providing support for the project to proceed. In return, for the new owners honoring the current contract up to 2018 and for driving transformation, we would like to propose that consideration be made for some prepayment to be made for up to 1 year of coal supply. Understanding the upfront capital injections to be made to ramp up production to meet coal supply requirements from these mines. We firmly believe that every possible angle must be considered and offered to ensure that supply is guaranteed at the contracted price for all these critical mines, thereby averting any national crisis that we as South Africa can afford.
Now, just to bring you up to speed, this is Tegeta in the process of purchasing Optimum Coal Mine, Optimum Coal Mine together with other subsidiaries from Glencoe. Now, this clearly is Eskom talking to DMR that there be a facilitation of the respective licenses by DMR so that the transaction could be quickly resolved. Over and above that, there is a proposal from DMR, or a commitment from DMR to assist, and a proposal that the prepayment of 1.7 billion be made to Tegeta. Now, are you aware as an industry player how long it takes to get these compliance certificates?
In our experience, we've had numerous occasions in terms of our projects where we'd have to apply for various licenses, whether it would be a water use license, whether it would be a mining right, or a Section 11 transfer. And we have not yet experienced a situation where we have received any of these licenses under 3 years. So it becomes almost the norm that you would wait, hence why I indicated earlier on that insofar as giving pre-advance notification when you're going to have to do things like closures, that you know that there are certain things that you've got to put in place, because when you're going to do a closure plan, you're going to have to go to the DMR and ask for approval for that closure plan to be accepted, because now you're going to be you're going to have to define that, and that sets the method with which you're going to do it and how that's going to be measured by the DMR insofar as whether you've adhered to that. So this is probably a record. Not to say the fact that, you know, the DMR in itself is very active in ensuring with ESCOM that these things get expedited. But with this knowledge at hand that you are presenting to me for the first time, it also seems to allege that there was a coal crisis that was actually happening at that time, which necessitated the expedition, you know, of getting these licenses and all the authorizations to happen very, very quickly. And yet, it becomes very clear to me now then that on one side, where we were requesting certain things to be happening for our Arnot mine and Mafube to bring these operations into a closure, then created that crisis. And therefore, the cancellation of contracts, two contracts, supplying Arnot Power Station, that in itself creates the crisis.
You see, that's precisely where I want us to get to. Was there a crisis, or let me put it this way, should there have been a crisis?
Mata, Arnot was supplying at that time, despite the fact that it had not had all the land, it was supplying about 1.8 million tons. Mafube was supplying about 1 million tons. That's a lot of tons. So when such tons all of a sudden come out of a system, for Arnot Power Station, a crisis emerges. But it's a self-induced crisis because there were contracts that were there that could have easily been extended and would be the most cost-effective contracts, because those contracts were supplying from both mines to Arnot Power Station using the belt system. So on a delivered basis, that was going to be the best option for Arnot Power Station.
Now, these, you've drawn a what you call a similar modus operandi, where, I mean, that's Arnot and Matla, where you say you as the company were of the view that the contracts, let's start with Arnot. That contract, in your view, was meant to have ran until 2015, December. And ESCOM's view was that that contract had to run until 2023. And back in 2013, because you had assumed, or you were of the view that the contract was ending in 2015, and in terms of the provisions of the contract, you must give a 2-year notice of terminating that contract. Can we just go back there? You gave ESCOM the notice, and what was ESCOM's position?
ESCOM was of the view that the contract ended in 2023. At that point in time, after going back and forth between the two organizations, we even were threatening each other to taking each other to court and having the court settle this matter. I think at some point sanity prevailed amongst the parties that at the end of the day, there is no winner in this instance. And we decided then that let us get together and let's agree that let us discover how we can actually continue the supply of coal, given the fact that we were going to renegotiate the terms. But that would have then secured the supply of coal into ANOD. So hence why there was the need for us to actually enter into an MOU, and at that point, Exxaro had highlighted that it would explore various scenarios with which we would present to Eskom those scenarios. There were actually seven scenarios. We sat down with Eskom as a team. It was a very senior team. And out of those seven, there was a joint agreement by both parties that the option that was decided on would be in the best interest of all the parties involved. And with that being said, then Eskom indicated that for them to be able to take this option for approval, it would have to have been backed up by an expert's opinion onto the commercial of the viability, technical viability of this option. They then requested us to provide them at least three names of technical companies like SRK, Hash, that could help assist them in actually doing this technical due diligence, if we may call it. We did give them the names, and that was the last we heard from them on this whole process.
There's a reason why you must give not 2 months notice, but 2 years notice. What are the reasons?
In terms of this CSA agreement for cost plus mines, it specifically stipulates that because you have to now put together a closure plan. Now, putting together a closure plan is a process that's going to also require not only your people putting it together, you have to have also other third parties who are going to actually verify that, because now this plan has to go and then be approved by the DMR as being your plan. And history has shown us throughout all our experience that for you, when you close a mine, you need at least 2 years of this, because you've got to ensure that the fund, the rehabilitation fund, is sufficiently funded as part of that, because the DMR will never accept it, a plan whereby there has been a shortage in terms of the rehabilitation fund. So it gives time for all of those things to be put in place in order for you now, at that end date when you have to close, you already now have a team that is ready with a plan that is approved to actually start executing the plan from that day.
Is it correct that given that this was a cost plus CSA, that there would have been certain contractual obligations that Eskom would have had to perform in that termination period of 2 years?
It is precisely in that, during that 2 years, the parties would have to sit together and agree and work this plan together and agree on this plan together and ensure that Eskom, from their contractual obligations, understand the cost that's going to be associated with this plan, and ensure also the operational cost that's going to be associated with this plan, and ensure that the rehabilitation fund is adequately provided for this plan to be supported. So yes, there is a contractual obligation from an Eskom's point of view insofar as what they need to do during this two-year period.
Were those discussions between yourselves and Eskom taking place in preparation for the closure, with the 2015 December date being the end of the contract?
What we have tried to show with regard to the timelines
that right up to September 2015, we had been negotiating in good faith with Eskom with the view of implementing the memoranda that we had both agreed to. So the discussions between that date, which was a two-year trigger date, right up to September, were about extending the mine. And therefore, the notion of terminating or of not giving notice of termination in September 2015 with the notice of closing the mine 3 months later was totally something that was against the contract. In actual fact, they were in default of their contract in that respect, because you have not given the two-year period to do that.
So it would appear from your testimony that the two-year period was not preparing for the closure of the contract, but rather the continuation of the contract. Do I understand you correctly?
You're quite right. That was exactly what was happening. And just to add on, because of the fact that the contractual obligation for closure talks to 2 years, part of what the workers, NUM, was saying to Eskom, now that you are giving a notice in September 2015, let us continue mining and preparing for closure for the next coming 2 years, because at least by that time, possibly even then, Eskom may have then agreed to further continue with the extension. But they would not even entertain the fact that let us use those 2 years then as part of preparing the closure to allow the workers, some of the workers, to continue working. Their view was that at the end of December 2015, you start the retrenchment process.
Let's just look at the timeline. We know there has been, in particularly in 2015, there was a revolving door at Eskom, both at board and at senior executive level. When were you having these constructive discussions of finding a win-win situation? And when did things turn for the worse? Who were you dealing with when things seemed to be going for a win-win solution? And when did this abrupt bomb get to be dropped?
If you just allow me to just to make sure I get the times, because a lot of things happened during that period, and I just want to get my facts correct in terms of when Mr. Molefe and Mr. Came in. Right up until March 2015, from 2013, we were dealing with Kiran Maharaj and Johan Bester. And that's when we were having the constructive conversations. Now, you will recall that at some point, some of the people that we were dealing with, especially Kiran, were suddenly suspended. And during that period after March 2015, between March 2015 and September 2015, I think that was the time that Mr. Olefe was, Mr. Molefe was appointed on the 25th of September 2015, 20, 14th of April. He came in as acting. Remember, he first acted, and then he was formally appointed on the 25th. So from April, if I may say, 2015, that's when everything changed.
But from April, does ESCOM explain to you that, look, they've changed their position of holding a view that the contract runs till 2023, that now they're in agreement with you, the contract would end 31 December 2015?
The first time we were informed about a change in ESCOM's view, given the fact that we were still negotiating and thinking that we're still negotiating in good faith with ESCOM. In actual fact, at that time, we kept on making inquiries to ESCOM as to when are we going to get a response. When are we going to get a response from them on the three names that we had suggested? But we were not getting very clear indications or responses from them. And it was only at the time when we received that letter in September 2015 informing us that ESCOM wants to terminate the contract in December 2015. That was the first time we formally heard any form of communication from ESCOM.
So the crisis referred to in the letter you've just read, is it self-induced crisis or what?
What I can say, Chair, and you can also draw your conclusions to this, Honourable Member. There were parties who were willing. There was coal that was available. There were people capable of producing the coal. And already engagements that were to go beyond 2015 December were being pursued. That was with Arnold. With Mafube, in spite of the fact that Mafube had in their own position thought that the coal was going to end, or the contract was going to end in 2015 December, and ESCOM was saying that that contract was going to end in 2023, the two parties, being Anglo and Exxaro, then decided to continue to supply coal, express its desire to continue supplying the coal right up to 2018. So you have two mines which were previously supplying the coal, both willing to continue supplying the coal, and both are being told to terminate at the same date.
The last issue from my side is, I just want the comparison here. And this is, given the background you sketched earlier on, one, about the benefits of these cost-plus CSAs in respect of ANOT, where ESCOM had to buy, to purchase land for you to continue mining, where there was no, those issues weren't resolved. And given the speedy resolution and ESCOM's enthusiasm to assist Tegeta to get all the licenses and the prepayment, given that at Matla to date you have not received the capital payment of 1.8 billion, what do you make about the fiduciary duties of the directors at ESCOM? Where does it seem their allegiance were? Were they serving interests of ESCOM, or were they serving other interests?
Given all the information that has transpired over this period of this investigation, some more information that one was not cited to, like for instance this letter, I can only draw conclusions based on this, rightly or wrongly. It just does not make sense to me that a mine that had been producing coal for many years, you know, Matla, if I can just give you a background of Matla. Matla was once the flagship of underground mining in South Africa. The Australians used to come to Matla to learn about underground mining. That's how we used. At one time, Matla was producing as much as 15 million tons per annum out of those three mines. So this mine is a mine that had been a very well-oiled machine, capable of going beyond the 10.06 contractual agreement, where Eskom asked of it to go far beyond that. And we were able to do that. The same people are still there. The same people are still there. And now the capital is being starved of that operation. To the extent that the mine is now rendered partly ineffective to actually comply with its contractual obligations. And on the other side, huge costs are incurred by Eskom, but far beyond and many times more than the capital cost that was required for that shaft by bringing in external coal. One thing I can tell you, that in my organization, as the CEO and as a director of the board, if I had to go and tell my shareholders that, that's the action that we are doing, and that was value destructive, shareholder value destructive, I wouldn't be the CEO today. Probably part of that board wouldn't be in existence, because that would have not been seen as demonstrating our fiduciary responsibility in so far as ensuring that we are protecting the interests of the shareholders. In this instance, the interest of the shareholders of Eskom is the government, it is the taxpayers, or the base load.
No further questions.
Thank you very much, Advocate Vanara and Mr. Bojo, for your comprehensive response to the questions asked.